Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome. This is U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We have another great show for the American people today. Back in our studio, we have my professor, I call him my professor, Dr. Jerome Hyler. He has a PhD, which is a doctorate in political science. He's the author of three books. His first book, Lock in America, The Moral Philosophy of the Founding Era. His second book, Everything You Have, The Case Against Welfare. And the third book, Only in America, The Goodness That Greatness Begot. We are blessed to have Dr. Jerome Hyler, PhD, in the studio once again. Welcome, Doctor, and thank you for coming back on our show to help educate the American people on where we are in socialism and capitalism in America today. Thank you. How are you?
Thank you, Chauncey. I'm doing very well today. Thank you so much for bringing me on once again.
We started the show, our initial show, I guess would be part one, talking about socialism and capitalism. And just to remind the American people, because of your extensive educational background, knowledge of these issues, we have to create a part two and a part three. Today is going to focus on capitalism, and then next week is going to part three. We're going to dive more into socialism. You know, through our conversations, Professor, you say you have a real problem with talking about capitalism. What is the problem with capitalism?
Well, for a long time, I've been very confused. Some who I've read and who create very astute arguments for capitalism, they say that capitalism is the greatest economic system ever devised by man. They point to all the appliances, tools, and other useful commodities that has brought ease and comfort to our daily lives. And all that is true. Capitalism has brought those blessings to our lives and made life so much more easier and comfortable than it is in most of the world, the third world especially, or as it has been throughout human history. It is much easier to get by with many of the comforts. On the other hand, other commentators talk about capitalism and decry the self-interest, the dog-eat-dog, the look-out-for-number-one selfishness that it seems to apply. And they point to the prolonged periods of hardship and desperation that capitalism has created across, say, the last 230 years. And they're right as well. There have been plenty of great recessions and great depressions and lesser depressions that struck this country almost every 20 years. Well, my question, my confusion is, how could something that is so good also be so bad? What's
going
on? How do you explain
that?
That
was going to be my next question, because even my thought about capitalism, until I've become educated by you, I thought it was always good. But I'm thankful that you're on the show to share us the other side. So how can both depictions be true?
The key to understanding and to clearing up the confusion is to recognize that there is no such thing as capitalism the way we speak of it. What we talk about is actually a mixture of two very different kinds of arrangements. And if we separate those arrangements, we could understand why, on the one hand, it brings us so many blessings, and on the other hand, carries along with it so many curses. So I would say that the two separate sets of arrangements are laissez-faire capitalism, that is one way of organizing a social system, and the other is crony capitalism. They are not the same thing, even though they both grew up side by side. Both can be traced to the origins of the country and the original policies, especially those struck by Alexander Hamilton. And yet, while there was crony capitalism, while there was also laissez-faire capitalism together, I think we understand a lot more if we separate the two. Let me put it like this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about not the system, but the people who practice so-called capitalism. First, there are laissez-faire capitalists. They are people like Bill Gates, Andrew Carnegie, Henry Ford. They identify a need in society and then invent and mass market and mass produce and market the invention or the gadget or the service that will satisfy the need they identify. And in the process, they can become very wealthy doing that. But they give us the cars and the steel to build buildings and bridges. They give us the smartphones and everything else that the wealthy capitalists have given us. The thing about them is they are willing to take the risks that free market competition necessarily creates. There are risks. If you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to go into business, you don't know what your competition is doing or going to do. You don't know what other products may come out. But laissez-faire capitalists, true capitalists, are willing to take the risk. Crony capitalists count on government to reduce or eliminate the risks. They run to government for all forms of assistance, subsidies, protective tariffs, a slew of policies that sort of bring them out of the cold and give them a success that government can for a while guarantee. So
I'd like to I want to interject and ask a question here as I'm listening to you. Does that mean that crony capitalism has led to corruption within our political system?
That's exactly the point. Where there is cronyism, there is corruption. And it's important to understand exactly why that is. Because whatever or however crony capitalism is practiced, it reeks of corruption. Because when government confers special benefits on some, this corporation, that robber baron capitalist or so, when it confers special benefits on some, it necessarily denies equal protection under law to all. Now, that's because inevitably policies that don't protect us all in the enjoyment of what is ours, but materially benefit some individuals in society, do so ultimately at the expense of others in society. Some benefit and others lose.
But nobody that I know of would approve of crony capitalism in America. How do our public figures or our politicians defend its adoption? How do they
explain it? Good question.
Yeah.
There, I would point to four ways in which it is defended. First, they tell us that it was the unregulated economy without government's remedial efforts that created all the problems, the volatility, the instability that made capitalism prone to financial panics and enduring struggles that spread across the country. So you can't leave, according to this analysis, which is mainstream economics, in almost every textbook you ever read or any discussion, they talk about the evils, the inadequacies of an unregulated capitalism without government involvement. And so government necessarily has to remedy the defects of this chaotic, unregulated capitalism by becoming involved. Second,
before we move,
they don't look at.
Doc, I'm sorry. Before you move to your next point, I have a question about your response of my initial question. Does that mean that crony capitalism might have been the reason why we had the collapse in the stock market?
Over and over and over again. And that is precisely the most important point I would make. That
Wow. Once
conceptually separate these two quote-unquote varieties of capitalism, you get to discover which aspect. Was it the laissez-faire capitalism, or was it the crony capitalism, also known as corporate welfare, that created the tough times that visited the country over and over again after these panics and financial collapses and the periods of enduring hardship? If you separate them and you look, is that the result of laissez-faire capitalism or the result of crony capitalism? You discover that time and time again, it was crony capitalism that created an artificial boom in the economy. Eventually, inevitably, boom times turned to tough times, and the country suffered for allowing that process to continue.
Before you move to your second point about crony capitalism, and I think you were going into providing corporate welfare, I just would like to let our listeners who are just calling in right now, this is U.S. National Politics. What is capitalism in America today? We have with us the most honorable, prestigious Dr. Jerome Hyler, PhD, doctorate in political science. He is breaking it down for us today, talking about the difference in the two systems within capitalism, which is laissez-faire capitalism and crony capitalism. And at this time, he's going to continue with his explanation on why nobody approves crony capitalism in America. Thanks again, Professor.
Thank you, Chauncey. Yes, although nobody approves of it, no one is proud to call himself a crony capitalist, and yet it goes on. And so I explain four factors that allow it to continue without really being exposed. So the second thing is that nobody looks at these government policies as corporate welfare or crony capitalism. They are all introduced and defended in the name of national growth, providing for the general welfare, giving jobs to the masses, pursuing American greatness, building an industrial empire from sea to shining sea. So these are the reasons these wonderful speeches were made in defense of many things like building the Transcontinental Railroad or other internal improvements, protective tariffs. They are all offered and introduced for the most patriotic of reasons, even though invariably they just benefit certain well-connected actors, the cronies, and harm many other people. The third reason why crony capitalism can be sustained is that, well, the Constitution. Lobbying Congress is just a right. It's free speech. It's every American's right to petition government. So that's all the crony capitalists are doing, and they do it in the name of free speech. Fourth, and maybe most compellingly, in a sense, they tell us that heartless capitalism will always leave behind hard-pressed victims. Political remedies must be introduced, namely social welfare policies, to relieve the pain and suffering, hence the rise of necessary social welfare benefits and services to relieve the suffering that these people say, these economists, these commentators say, capitalism must invariably bring.
You know,
besides, One final point, Chauncey, that I think expresses it well. If government could assist the rich and greedy with corporate welfare in the 19th century, certainly it had the lawful power to aid the poor and needy with social welfare in the 20th or 21st century.
So this is
how's that for a logical argument?
Well, this is why I was smiling, because I had an idea you were going to go there before I did. So it looks like the two dueling parties, the Republican and Democratic Party, can lobby for social welfare or social giveaways on each part of the spectrum to defend why they want to represent those people. And that's ironic, because not only do you have social welfare, you have the corporate welfare, and one cannot exist without the other. For justification.
As soon as one exists, it creates the conditions that allow politicians of both parties to defend the giving of the other form of welfare.
Yes, and it's just ironic, before we move forward, that even politicians today, and looking at the left, they will argue that people who are less fortunate deserve help and deserve to be taken care of, okay, for the social paradigm perspective, but they don't say that they're receiving those politicians from the same corporate entities that they vote on for their corporate welfare as well. And that is where, I guess, ties in crony capitalism, where the politicians play a role.
It is so true. In other words, politicians of both parties get moral credit for helping to alleviate the suffering of the poor and huddled masses with social welfare, and they get campaign contributions from grateful donors and lobbyists who they award corporate welfare to. They award corporate welfare. They get donations from lobbyists and donors and special interest groups who benefit from their corporate welfare. And at the same time, they get moral credit for being so compassionate and giving assistance to the needy, who, according to the theory, suffer from the evils of capitalism. Well,
Professor,
as you can imagine, go ahead.
We've talked all night, so I have to be careful. I have a certain amount of time, and I have a certain amount of questions I have to get to, but we will have you on again. What's wrong or misguided about this entire perspective, even though I have an idea by our conversation, but just to help to redefine for the American people, what's wrong or misguided about this entire perspective?
It's built on a number of myths, a number of claims that have been made repeatedly by some of the most prestigious mainstream economists and professors, who literally are mistaken in how they organize their ideas. First, the idea that 19th century capitalism was unregulated and therefore it was chaos and unstable, and that's why it led to overproduction and financial panics and crashes. It's preposterous. If government did not regulate in the sense of restraining or restricting free economic activities like it does today with environmental regulations, government nevertheless intervened to promote economic progress and growth. That is also regulating and penetrating the economy. It is not leaving the economy alone. And typically, government did far more harm when it was promoting growth in the name of the general welfare than it could have ever done by restraining economic activity. Government intervened in the economy in a variety of ways, generally to the advantage of certain special interests who pleaded for such action, who sent lobbies to plead with Congress for all manner of special interest regulation, what we call corporate welfare.
May I ask you a political question?
Mm-hmm.
Because of what we're talking about today, is President Trump undermining crony capitalism?
He is doing his best. He is trying as hard as one man, even one president, can to do that. That's what it means to drain the swamp. That's what it means to show the establishment politicians the door. Two of the promises he made, which he hopes he will be able to keep and would prefer to keep, but he can't do it alone. He needs Congress to pass bills to basically show the lobbyists and the K Street special interests the door so that they don't have the influence they now exert on Congress in passing so many bills that benefit those special interests, but ultimately redound to the disinterest of most Americans. So I say Godspeed, Mr. President, but I realize you can't do it alone, and that's why it is so important at this stage to educate as many Americans as we can reach with the separation. Chauncey, I know we're running low on time, so let me share with our listeners what I've discovered. The long succession of panics and crashes caused not by free market activity, not by laissez-faire capitalism, but by corporate welfare policies alone created the quote-unquote need, the demand, and the excuse for social welfare reforms from the progressive era to the New Deal and beyond. In other words, it was the activities undertaken in the guise of general welfare, but really amounting to crony capitalism, that created all of the problems in the economy, not laissez-faire capitalism, but the crony capitalism that created the problems that then politicians went back to their chambers in the House and the Senate and even on the judiciary to create policies to remedy the problems that crony capitalism created. So corporate welfare created the conditions that led honest Americans even to cry out for social welfare policies. Corporate welfare led to the quote-unquote need for social welfare remediation. If there were never those corporate welfare crony capitalist policies introduced in American politics, there would never have been a need for all of the social welfare policies that resulted when people suffered, and people really did suffer, but the suffering was the result of artificial economic booms that turned into economic busts time and time again. If you would like, now we don't have too much time, but I can give you one very quick example of how
the process
played out.
I was going to ask you, for our listeners, if you can, you know, I understand what you're saying, but just to maybe break it down, can you give our listeners a down-to-earth example of the process that you're describing?
Absolutely. Let me give you two brief examples. In 2008, all of us experienced the housing crisis. And the housing crisis turned into a financial crisis with people losing roughly half of their investment funds, the funds they set aside for pensions, for living in retirement, and people suffered greatly. The ensuing Great Recession, as it was called, lasted literally until Donald Trump assumed office early in 2017 and turned things around. But if you look at that housing crisis, it could never have existed had Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the Federal Housing Administration not taken the risk out of issuing mortgage loans to families, because now all of the banks and real estate brokers were able to issue subprime mortgages to people who really didn't qualify under the usual terms for mortgage loans because they weren't taking a risk. As soon as they gave out those mortgages and didn't get a down payment, there was no income verification because the banks and the mortgage lenders could do that because they turned around and they sold those mortgages to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of expanding the American dream. The American dream is for every family to own their own home. Home ownership is the family dream. Democratic and Republican presidents believed in expanding that dream, and the vehicle for doing that in the beginning was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which was authorized to spend billions of dollars purchasing mortgages from the banks that handed out the subprime loans. And there was no reason for a bank not to hand it out because the bank knew it could turn that mortgage over to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and be paid for it. And that was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's problem if these subprime mortgages defaulted and they lost the money, which they did and had to be bailed out. There was also the issue of bundling. And what not too many people realize is that Ginnie Mae in 1970 was the first company to bundle a lot of mortgages and offer them to the public as investment vehicles. And then mortgage-backed securities became the name of the game. They were given AAA ratings, and everyone felt they were safe harbors for their investments until the whole thing exploded. Because as soon as interest rates went up and all of these borrowers were no longer able to pay the adjustable rate mortgage, the ARM, that it was costing them, they lost their ability to pay their mortgages. Their homes were foreclosed. They were put out in the street. And that's exactly the pattern. It's not the one I was thinking of talking about today, because there's even more dramatic examples. But it was the most recent, and it really comes down to proving my point, helping to prove my point, that it was corporate welfare policies, in this case, in the name of expanding the American dream and allowing people who didn't have the credit worthiness to get a prime mortgage loan to letting them also be homeowners, even though it was a doomed policy from the start. And when doomsday struck in September of 2008, the whole country went into the beginnings of what would be a 10-year Great Recession. And that's a perfect example. It should not be blamed on an unregulated market. What government actually did was regulate in spades.
Professor Dr. Rome Heiler, we want to thank you for being on our show. To all of our listeners in America listening to U.S. National Politics, please join us next week for part three, What is Socialism in America? We will be joined back again with Dr. Jerome Heiler. If you would like to follow us on Facebook, it is U.S. National Politics 101. If you would like to follow us on Twitter, it's U.S. Politics, the number 2, day, D-A-Y. Also, you can locate Dr. Jerome Heiler on Facebook at Jerome, J-E-R-M-O-N-E, Heiler, H-U-Y-L-E-R, on Facebook. We want to thank all of our listeners for coming on today and joining us. And once again, Dr. Heiler, we'd like to thank you, and we look forward to having you on our show again next week. To all of our listeners in America, once again, we want to say thank you, and we'll see you next Wednesday at 6 o'clock for part three.
Tuesday.
I'm sorry, Tuesday at 6 o'clock, What is Socialism in America Today? Thank you very much, and have a great evening.
Thank you, Chauncey.